This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Welcome back. We're at the top of the hour, Food for Thought with Carol, and joining me is Tracy Gregoire. And our next guest is one of our regular segments, bi-weekly, Randy Clemens, a sriracha author and a sriracha expert, and just you're a foodie. I mean, you're a major foodie. I love it.
I do like food. I'm guilty as charged.
And I hear that today we're going to talk about cast iron cooking.
Yeah.
I love that. I did a little research on it, too.
Oh, well, I did, too. So cool. We'll have something to talk about
today.
Well,
it's making a really – I think it was – you know, when people think about it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but thought about it as that's the way, you know – our grandparents
used to cook.
And then you think of it as what a hassle, because you have to, you know, you don't know how to take care of those heavy things properly. That's like what I kind of grew up thinking. And then my husband recently decided to get one, well, last year, and now we're getting more and more of them.
Yes.
And it's just what a huge difference it makes. And I think it's making a huge comeback. Is that it must have had something to do with all the nonstick pans that came out.
I think that had a big part to do with it. So, you know, there's a little bit of know-how that you want to have with a cast iron pan, but I definitely think they're gaining in popularity. They do have if you take good care of them, you can have a really great nonstick surface that doesn't, you know, involve any chemicals being added or anything like that.
For life.
Forever. So I use my grandmother's cast iron skillet. I mean, that thing's at least, I wish she was here to tell me, but, you know, I think it's at least 75 years old.
Wow.
And I'd given one for my parents to a friend, and but yeah, they last. I mean, and there's just really, for me, there's no comparing the way they transfer heat, the way they hold heat. You get really nice, even cooking, and it just the amount of heat it can hold. If you preheat that pan before you put something in, mm-hmm. that's how you're going to get a really nice sear on a steak or on, you know, any kind of veggies. But what I also like is I've got a cast iron grill pan. So it looks just like a grill. It's got, you know, the sort of raised surfaces, but you can grill indoors with it. You still want to open some windows if you're getting it really hot. I definitely set off the smoke alarm last week.
Yeah, we do that too.
Yeah, that means you're doing it right. You do want to have pretty good ventilation, especially if you're using a marinade that's got some sugar in it, because you are going to be creating some steam with that higher heat. But that's how you get those grill marks. That's how you get that char flavor. And I love using that grill pan for veggies too. I mean, bok choy and carrots and zucchini, putting those on the grill pan, you still get that great smoky flavor from that high heat, you know, being directly applied onto the veggies. And so you get this really smoky flavor that I think can sometimes be missing when you're not using bacon or something like that. But you can still really get that nice flavor if you're missing a little bit of summer. As it gets colder, a cast iron grill pan is a really great investment to have, I think.
Yeah, we haven't done that with the veggies yet. I don't know why I haven't thought. Maybe just because we kind of use it for isolated things right now as we're learning. But the best thing is my husband does a ribeye. And the nice thing about the cast iron is that so we can get that nice sear and then take it right from the top of
and put it into
the oven.
Yep.
And you can't do that with a lot of pans because of the plastic handles or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And so the only thing you got to be careful about there is remembering to grab an oven mitt.
Yes.
And to keep it, I always keep it on the handle.
Yes,
because
I do the same thing.
When you pull that cast iron out, it's going to hold that heat. It's going to be rocket hot for an hour afterwards if you've got it in the oven. So especially if you've got kids around or someone who wasn't cooking, you know, it's a nice favor if you've got that kind of nice arrangement where, I cook, you do the dishes. Leave a towel or the pot holder. Say something to somebody. Hey, don't touch
this.
Tip. Yeah, it's.
It takes a while.
I've done it. I've done it to myself, and it's not fun. Not fun.
Now I printed off 7 myths about cast iron pans. So I'm just going to read them off to you, and then you can talk about them.
Sure.
How's that?
Sure.
So first one is cast iron is difficult to maintain.
It's not difficult to maintain. Actually, for me. What it comes down to is you want to have a well-seasoned pan. So seasoning and cast iron pan, some of them come pre-seasoned. Mm-hmm. And what that actually is that when the iron is hot, so after you use it in the oven or cooking, you put a little bit of oil on it and you just let it heat into it. And so it actually polymerizes and bonds with the iron. And so it's not a chemical, but it's actually bonded to the iron, and it's what gives you that cast iron, that nonstick surface. So to keep that, sometimes, especially if you've got to do some heavy scrubbing on your pan or something like that, you want to re-season it. But really, if you're not doing a bunch of heavy scrubbing and not using soap regularly or soaking it, that's like the cardinal sin. You don't want to soak your cast iron skillet
in
water.
Is it true? Yeah. You're not supposed to put soap on it, right?
You can do a little. I mean, sometimes you have to. But for me, what I do is after it's all cooled down, I often just get a paper towel and wipe it out. So if I cook something particularly messy that's stuck, I'll put a little water in it and then heat it back up. And between, you know,
it'll
just cooking it, yeah, it comes right up.
But
then
you said something that I did not know. So I know about seasoning it, but I did not know. You said you're not supposed to soak, like with a K, not soap, right?
Yeah.
We said you're not supposed to use soap, but
right,
soaking it. I, every time we have a big pot, the big
enamel.
No,
the Dutch oven.
Dutch oven,
yeah.
Thank you. We have the big Dutch oven for making chili, and what a mess it makes. So I stick it right in the sink, and I fill it up, and I soak it. Well, I did not know you're not supposed to do that.
That can cause rust if you don't have, if you're not seasoned.
It.
So
yeah, and I do season it, but I still, I'm like, oh, then I'm feeling like I'm wiping off rust with it.
Yeah, so that's
Thank
kind
you.
Of
learned something there today.
That's really the only maintenance it needs. Like I said, the paper towel usually works for me, and if I've done my job correctly and cooked it well and it was nonstick, a lot of times I'll just take it out, and sometimes if there's still a little oil left, or if you're cooking meat, you know, if you're making bacon or something like that, you know, you keep those drippings in the pan if you'd like for the next time to cook whatever you're going to make next.
It's
pretty low maintenance, actually.
Right.
I like what they put here. They said buying a cast iron skillet is like adopting a newborn baby and a puppy at the same time.
Now that sounds high maintenance.
I know, right? You are going to pamper it through the early stages of its life and be gentle when you store it. That seasoning can chip off. So the important thing, you know, what it sounds like is you gotta be re-seasoning it. If it comes off.
Yes, definitely. And so sometimes I'll do that. I'll see it'll look a little less glossy. It'll look kind of like as a matte finish or like, a little rust. And so you just put maybe a teaspoon to a tablespoon of oil in it, get a paper towel, wipe that around.
And just wipe
it's
it
that
all
simple.
Around.
People
and then,
think, oh, it's seasoning. It's right. difficult. It's not. A few little drops and wipe it off.
Yeah, and then I do heat it again. Just let it come up and get the oil like...
I'm not doing that step.
Not quite smoking, but get it hot and then just turn it off. I don't put my cast iron pans away. I use them almost all the time. So that's, again, in the low maintenance category for me. They stay on top of the range at all times pretty much.
Okay.
The grill pan goes away, but there's two skillets on the range at any given time. Four burners and two are taken up by cast iron. So.
Yeah, well, because that's true. Because every time I think I'm gonna cook something, I don't always go for them because they're on the on the bottom shelf,
and they're heavy.
And there's like three of them stacked inside of each other. Which is that a no-no?
No, you can totally stack.
Okay.
Them. Yeah. So with other nonstick pans, you don't want to because
right.
that can chip the chemical coating, and that can leach into your food at that point. Cast iron, you are leaching iron from the cast iron, but that's great news, especially for me as a vegetarian. It always kind of amazed the phlebotomists when I went in to donate blood. They would always check my iron count, and they were like, wow, you got a great iron count. I was like, oh, you know, not bad for a vegetarian. They'd always, you know, kind of look at me funny, but you actually do. Depending on the kind of food and how long it's cooked, something like tomato sauce, if you're making spaghetti and you cook tomato sauce in the iron and the cast iron, the iron content of your tomato sauce can go up like 2,000%. And so things with less acidity is a little less, but that was one of the more surprising numbers that I saw. So for anyone who's anemic or just doesn't feel like they get enough iron in their diet, cook in cast iron.
I didn't know that.
Interesting. I didn't know that either.
I learned something new.
A lot of
That's
these
why
are...
I love this show.
It's true. You are always learning things. A lot of these we've kind of they're separate ones, but we've talked about it. Like you should never wash cast iron with soap. What about using metal utensils on your cast iron pan?
Go for it. That's the other bonus over other nonstick surfaces. Again, if you've got a good seasoning on there, it's not going to chip off from any kind of metal. If you've got some rust showing, that will chip off with metal. So, again, if you're just taking that little bit of care to keep it seasoned.
And now just one more thing, because I think we already talked about it, but I just want to reiterate it, because it's happened to me before, and I have seasoned it. Seasoning basically is just taking some olive oil or vegetable oil and just spreading it on. What if you still get a little bit of rust with it?
You're just not putting enough. Yeah, I mean, do it at that point. I would say to do a more in-depth seasoning. So,
with heating again.
Yeah, well, okay. Like a big, when you get it from like a cast iron manufacturer, oftentimes what they recommend or what they'll do is they'll coat it with oil. And yeah, you want to use like a olive oil or a neutral oil, coconut oil. You don't want to use butter or something that's got a low smoke point or that'll go rancid easily.
Grapeseed oil?
Sure.
Because that's the only one I buy, so we don't even use.
Yeah, or if you've got bacon drippings again, or you like lard, you can certainly do it with that. But you just put a thin coat all around, wipe it with a paper towel. And if you're doing this kind of heavy duty seasoning, you can do it on the whole pan if you'd like. But stick it in like a 350 degree oven for an hour, and then let it cool all the way down. And that's kind of a more tough seasoning that's going to stick with it.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's the more in-depth, where if you ever really need to do sort of some heavy maintenance, you know, if you're really just, if the little maintenance isn't cutting it, but
that's really, really, really simple.
Yeah. And I've heard that from cast iron manufacturers to do once a year, but I don't know the last time I did. So it's just, yeah.
Okay.
Any more myths on there?
There, modern cast iron is just as good as old cast iron. It's all the same material, after all. That must be true, I would think.
Well, they used to manufacture cast iron a little differently. They did something where they actually poured the cast iron into sand molds, and that they would compress the sand and do all that kind of stuff. And so when they came out, it was actually a really nice, smooth finish. It wasn't bumpy like you kind of mm-hmm. see now, where it's a little bit rough. But it's just kind of a matter of preference. It was a little bit different the way they used to do it, but I my grandmother's is nice and smooth. And actually, there's a company that came out a few years ago with a Kickstarter. I think it was called Finex, and they'd completely like engineered this like the most efficient cast iron skillet. It's actually kind of, it looks a little octagonal. And they've got some really interesting, like, brushed pattern on the surface. And their handle is like a coil that goes around the handle. So actually, it doesn't, when you've got it on the range, at least, it doesn't pick up that heat the same way a normal cast iron handle would. Mm-hmm. Going in the oven, it still does, of course. But that is a nice feature. But yeah, the ones you get from Lodge or any of the kind of current manufacturers, they'll still have that kind of bumpy surface. I don't know what in the manufacturing process changed, but I think it's just a matter
of preference.
I think I
would have liked it much smoother. Sometimes that when I'm cleaning it, I'm like, oh, I wish this was smoother.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't realize that the old ones used to be.
Hmm. That's about all my myths I have.
Well, I think it's neat, again, because of all the flavor you get and because the pans last seemingly forever. But yeah, this is the way people used to cook when there was hearth cooking, you know, over a fire.
Right.
These Dutch ovens were engineered, and they would have a kind of handle that held them up over the fire. And so it is, you know, the way many, probably all of our grandparents cooked. But I definitely see a resurgence with it. And for me, just being able to have that heat and how much it holds it. So with that, I think if you're just adjusting to trying cast iron for the first time, definitely know that even if you take the pan out of the oven or off the heat, even more so than a normal pan, it's really going to keep cooking whatever you've got. So I do some flame management. You know, if I see my stuff starting to get really hot, I'll just take it off the burner for, you know, 30 seconds or a minute, and it's still cooking plenty, and, you know, stir it around at that point so you're mm-hmm. not getting anything on the bottom too heavily cooked. But that's just one little trick I like to use to, you know, sort of moderate the heat. But I want to tell people you shouldn't be afraid of using a high heat. I just remember, you know, if you ever want a really good sear on something, mm-hmm. you got to go high heat. The other great thing about cast iron, once you've preheated it, and so I put mine on the burner for 5 to 10 minutes. Not so it's, you know, burning hot, but have your stuff ready. Put a little oil on it. It should shimmer right away. And right when you put your steak or whatever you're cooking down, it should start sizzling right
away.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. And in culinary school, they call that the applause. It's your food cheering you on, thanking you for cooking it properly. And so you should hear that. If you don't, that's a surefire way to get your food to stick.
Do you do the little test with a sprinkle of water to see if it's hot enough yet?
You can. You certainly can. I just, you know, I see the way the oil, you know, just starts to kind of shimmer and spread out.
Even, yeah.
Okay. That's kind of my cue, my visual cue. But yeah, and so after that applause and after heating that pan, cast iron actually radiates a lot of heat, more so than stainless steel or any other like cooking equipment. So not only are you cooking with induction, with the direct contact of whatever you're cooking to the pan, there's this radiant heat coming off of the, that's stored in this cast iron. So when you're cooking a thicker piece of meat or just bigger pieces of vegetables, you're actually not just cooking on the surface like you would be, you know, more so with stainless steel, but you're also cooking more into the center of the piece of meat or big pieces of veggies. I love
it. Because it's almost like an open oven, really, is basically what you're saying.
Well, yeah. I was going to say that a minute ago. We went to a field trip with my son a couple years ago out to Strawberry Bank. Have you been out there yet?
I drove past it the other day. I was up in Portsmouth.
I think you would enjoy it. You should check it out. But And they have these little classes where all the kids sit around and they have a big open fireplace with the, you know, the Dutch oven hanging, and they take some of the coals out and they stick it right on the hearth, and they put the pan on top of the hot coals there, and they made cookies like on the lid of the Dutch oven, and you know, it basically holds the heat, keeps cooking and everything, and they have to, you know, time it perfectly. It was really neat for the kids to see cookies be made just like that.
Yeah, well, and they have been used as ovens, the Dutch oven, but something with a lid. I do frittatas a lot because I make them in the morning, and then by the time I'm ready for lunch, it's there. And by the time I'm ready for dinner, it's still sitting there, and it just, I leave it in the pan all day, and it gets better by the time dinner rolls around. But you can have it hot, cold, room temperature, whatever you like. I put the second cast iron skillet over it to sort of form a lid. You could do it with foil too, but to save foil, I just flip the other pan over it. But it's really convenient to do a whole lot of different things with it. Cornbread and other breads, it was used as an oven. Yeah. So a lot of times over the hearth as well, they would put something underneath, so there wasn't just the fire hitting the bottom of the pot, but it would still heat the air inside the cast iron, so you could bake bread. Cornbread certainly is one of my favorite things to make. You make like a nice cornbread batter, and you can use butter, coconut oil, bacon fat, whatever you like, and then pour in the batter, get a sear going on the bottom of the cornbread, and then you throw it in the oven to finish baking. But that's how you get a really nice brown.
There's a restaurant that does that, and they serve it right in the little mini cast iron pans.
And those, I think, I've been seeing a lot more in restaurants for sure. These little, you know, 4-inch, or 2-inch little mini. Well, I guess not 2-inch, but 4-inch. Yeah, these little cast iron skillets where they bring something out. So
even desserts sometimes.
Cruzette has them. I have like 4 or 5 of them.
Okay.
Little cast iron things. Yeah, they're really cute. They're wicked cute, actually.
And that's why we should buy it, because it's cute.
Of course.
There you go. Yeah, cast iron,
and they have
cute
different colors, and you know, yeah. Okay. All right, we need to take a break. It is Monday. You're listening to Food for Thought on The Pulse. You can stream us live on the World Wide Web, WTPLFM.com. We are in studio with Randy Clemens, Sriracha cookbook author of 2 Sriracha cookbooks, and just an all-around foodie. We're talking about cast iron. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Back, Food for Thought with Carol. Joining me is Tracy Gregoire, and we are in studio with Randy Clemens. We're talking about cast iron cooking, and we just have a couple minutes, so do you want to just like kind of cap off cast iron and maybe getting people to not be so intimidated by it, which I was sharing with you. I was kind of the same way, not being nervous to cook with high heat and to flip only once. That's important.
Yeah, so I think one of the tips I just thought of, you can buy them online. You can buy them in cookware stores, but like look at yard sales, look at secondhand stores, because you'll find them in there because it's heavy and because people still think. And use that to your advantage here. You know, you've listened today. You've learned some good things, and you want to try it. You know, there's plenty of people who just still think it's a little scary, so they don't. But that's a great way to find one for a lot, you know, a little bit less money, but they're not that expensive, really.
And they'll be seasoned.
I was just going to say the same thing.
Yeah, well, and you think about that, right? Like, that's so cool. I'm cooking in the same pan my grandparents cooked in. So some of that seasoning might still be, you know, that might still be there if you want to get, you know, down to particle by particle.
But I think some people are sketched out about that. I'm not, but I do think people are like, oh, I don't want other people's.
I wouldn't want my other grandma's cast iron skillet. Sorry, Nancy, but you know what you did. No, I'm kidding.
But you can, I mean, you can absolutely clean it and be safe.
Yeah.
The high heat alone.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. Right. So, get your cast iron, heat it up for 5 to 10 minutes beforehand. You don't want to be seeing smoke coming off of it. That's a little too hot. But that could be your indicator of like, oh, okay. So turn it down a little bit. Then add your oil. You don't want your oil smoking unless you're doing a really fast stir fry. But, you know, turn it down so you've got it shimmering but not smoking. And whatever you're going to be cooking, especially if it's like a big piece of meat or like I do cauliflower steaks, big slice of cauliflower, like cut right out of the head, like straight down. And you turn it on its side, so it's just like this big flat piece, and it kind of looks like a sliver of brain, I guess.
I was picturing that. Yeah. I was thinking brain.
So, yeah. But, you know, I love doing that. It's just a really nice thing for me to do. So you get your pan really hot, and you throw it down there, and don't touch it. Wait at least 3 minutes, maybe five, depending on what you're cooking. But the temptation is there. I know. But don't. If you can get away with flipping your food only once, you'll be really happy. So like burgers, I like to do 3 minutes and then flip it. And understanding, again, that you've got this radiant heat coming through from the cast iron. After you flip it, you probably need a minute or two less, 1 or 2 minutes less. And but just, you know, keep an eye on it. But you're going to get a really, really nice crust, a nice sear on it from that high heat and from only flipping once. If you keep messing with it, it's not able to get that sear. And when you don't get that sear properly, your food's gonna stick. When that crust forms, it lifts off the pan. So if you try to flip early, your food's trying to tell you not to.
Right.
So especially it's with fish true. Or something like that, be a little more patient.
Let it.
You know, maybe it's an issue of not adding enough oil or something like that. But with cast iron, with nonstick, if it is sticking, wait.
It's because it's not.
Well, think about pancakes. When you put a pancake on, you don't touch it until it boils just to the right
bubbles,
and then you bubbles, and then you flip it.
Yeah.
And then it's done.
Yeah.
So everything should be cooked like a pancake.
Yeah. There you go.
We have to keep it simple for me, you know.
I got it.
No, back to the cauliflower. I know we have to go, but the cauliflower steak that you were talking about, tell me what you season that with.
It depends. I mean, sometimes I'll do just a dry rub with some oil or make sort of like a paste. There's an Egyptian spice mix called Duka that I really like. It's usually done with, walnuts or almonds or whatever kind of nuts you like. And cumin and some other spices, some sesame seeds
with it before.
And olive oil. I love that. And I modify it sometimes with pistachios or just whatever I've got, but that smeared on as like a paste, it almost looks like pesto when you make it, and you could certainly do pesto as well.
Do you like good pesto? I didn't think of that.
Yeah. Okay. So those are the kinds of things.
Sounds really good.
I made cauliflower, like mashed potatoes, kind of.
Yeah.
My kids weren't a huge fan, but I loved them.
Well, and also Indian spices like a curry. I love aloo gobi, like the cauliflower and potato dish. And from Indian restaurants, Taj India has a great one right around the corner here.
Yeah.
So I'll do that sometimes as well. Just, yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you, Randy, very much.
My pleasure.
Learning all about cast iron cooking. I can't wait to go home and dig out my cast iron pan now.
Dust them off.
I know. It's true. Daryl has one, and we've been using it. So, but yeah, very interesting. I'm going to look at it in a different way now.
Cool.
I'm going to go home and make sure it's seasoned properly. I haven't really looked at it too well. But you're listening to Food for Thought, and up next, Steve Freeman, Wake the Health Up America. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol, and joining me is Tracy Gregoire, and it is now time in the show on Monday when we are joined with Steve Freeman, Wake the Health Up America. Welcome back, Steve.
Thank you.
And what did you do this weekend?
I went to an all-day cigar festival yesterday.
And a cigar?
You? Smoked a lot of... Yeah, I like cigars on occasion.
You got to see my brother's cigar room. You haven't seen that?
No,
the
I haven't.
The Glen room?
No.
Oh. As a name.
It's a great treat.
Glen, named after Glenn Levitt.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Fabulous.
It looks like you're walking into New York City in some underground fancy place. It's like pretty crazy.
In this building?
It's right over there. I will show you.
That's
okay.
Good to know. We'll see it when we go off air. Yeah, well, so they
I'm
had
a text them because we're going to take a little tour. But go on, keep talking.
They had a raffle, gave away a Harley Davidson and a bunch of prizes and stuff. And
did you win?
No, but the friend I went with just wanted, he bid on one item and he won that item. So not
good.
Bid, sorry, it wasn't a bid, it was a raffle. So you just bought a bunch of tickets and put them in that cigar box. So he was very happy. Well, he won a barrel from Jack Daniel's Distillery, signed from the master distiller.
That's
so it's
cool.
Definitely worth way more than the $10 worth of raffle tickets were.
Wow.
But it was a beautiful day, a couple of live bands right there in Londonderry at Twin's new smoke shop, which is really state-of-the-art, right next to your diner.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So totally state of the art. It doesn't, like, it's not awfully smoky like most cigar bars are.
Mm-hmm. Same with him down here, my brother's cigar room over here. It has some fancy schmancy.
Yep.
Ventilation
or thing.
I don't know any homeowners in particular, wives, that say, "Oh yeah, I'd love it if you all smoked in my house." So you really got to consider ventilation or get outside.
Oh, his wife said, "You're not doing it anymore at the house." Boom. So Brian's like, "All right, well, I'm making a room."
Growing up as a child, of course, my dad used to have poker games on Thursday nights, and the house stunk for weeks. Probably why I never took a liking to cigarette smoke. And he put a fan in and stuff, but it's still, cigars just saturate everything. So I don't blame anybody who says, "No, you're not smoking those in my house or my car." So that was it. And Saturday I went to Boston, had a great day walking around. It was beautiful. Met my nephew, had lunch, bought some shoes. So I had a great weekend, actually, and the weather was beautiful.
It was gorgeous.
It was.
Good day for the Patriots game.
Perfect, yeah.
Oh, that's right. The Patriots played. And wait a minute. Hello. Okay, the Patriots played. Greatest team. I'm not a sports guy at all, but please give these guys their due. They are phenomenal. They are amazing. They living history.
It. Yeah, did you happen to see the score?
I don't know. Was it 72-3 or something like that?
It wasn't that bad. It was close.
57 or something.
Whether the footballs are lubed or deflated, these guys, come on.
Give credit where credit is due.
Give credit where credit is
due. They're just jealous.
They are jealous.
It's awful.
It's sad that we as a society, he's on top. We got to topple him. He can't be that humanly good. It's like if a guy's running a marathon and he breaks his way. He's from Kenya or Nairobi, wherever these guys are from. Next year, you're rooting for him to trim 3 seconds off his time because he is one human. But because Tom Brady is one human on a team, I just don't get it why they want to continually knock him down. And I went to the Red Sox last week, and they're the worst team in the world. I'm like, all right, they're last this year. I don't know how you can be World Series 1 year. And then,
I know.
But I went to the game. They got a grand slam. I saw history. I was like, what a great night to be in a baseball game. And I don't care that they're still last. It's still fun to go.
It is. It's
history.
A blast.
Just walking through that, and, you know, it's old. You got to duck under pipe work and stuff like that. You don't get that at the new stadiums.
It's true.
You know?
Yeah.
So did you hear at one of the recent Patriots games what the Jets fans did?
No.
They hired one of those planes with a banner and flew it across the stadium, the Patriots stadium, and saying something about the Patriots being cheaters.
No kidding.
No.
That's just awful.
Poor sportsmanship.
So even though this isn't food related, I do sort of wake the health up, America. You know, I'm not a sports guy at all, but everybody I know is. I'm the standalone. But this Tom Brady guy, his records speak for themselves. You can't say he's cheating. I mean, he's an amazing human being that's doing incredible things. Let him rise to the top and cheer him on. Stop trying to knock him down.
It's true.
Get these other teams to get better coaches or better quarterbacks, whatever it is. So
we went apple picking on Sunday.
I saw you made Daryl made a bunch Daryl of made better than apple mother's pie. Recipe.
It was close.
You said it was mom. I think it was better.
I had to say that for Daryl.
Okay.
He is so funny. He has this Pampered Chef apple peeler.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I've seen that.
You know, it's just too much work.
It looks like a lot of work.
Takes this whole thing out. You got to put it together. I mean, I'm over exaggerating, but. You know, and he put dish towels on the floor. He's got dish towels all over the kitchen table. He's cranking it to the table. I'm like, I could have had 5 of them peeled while you're just getting that stupid thing ready.
There's been
I got in trouble.
Is he upstairs looking at you?
No.
Oh, I thought you were looking up like you were.
No, I'm saying I got in trouble yesterday when I said that.
Oh, she's looking up for forgiveness. There's been this video. It's great, and I've seen it with potatoes also, but this guy takes a flat spade bit, which is, you know, it's for drilling larger holes, like 1 inch, 2 inch, sticks it in the apple, done.
Get out.
No lie. I'm like, that's the way you peel apples. So he just sticks the drill into the apple and spins it real quick, puts the drill on, and he just literally takes the peeler and goes around the apple, pulls it off, next apple, done.
I'm trying to picture
cool.
that.
Yeah.
I know. Me, I can't quite picture it either, but...
It's just think of a flat bit that goes into an apple so it locks in and engages it, so then it spins it as fast as a drill putting a screw into the wall.
And then you hold the drill with one hand and the peeler with the other hand?
Yeah.
All right. Then.
And you just go, you know, from, I don't know what the two pieces, from stem to tail of the apple, whatever it's called.
Ah. And you just,
I know sound effects don't work on radio, but you just roll across the apple and the apple's peeled and done.
Brilliant.
But what an experience going to Max Apples. I haven't gone apple picking in a few years. So it was very fun. It was fun. I mean, lots of people there. You know, we went on Sunday, so it was packed with people. And, you know, those apples are so good. We got some Honeycrisp and got some Mac apples, and delicious.
I had a Honeycrisp an hour ago. They are, oh, wow, those delicious.
Did you say you went Sunday?
Yes.
My son was there with my mother-in-law at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great thing to do, apple picking.
It is.
It's certainly
a
great thing to take a first date on, or second or last date even.
You know,
but
what
it's a fun event.
It is. Yeah. And it's fast. I mean, you fill up. I mean, the apple crisps, I don't know if you've been yet this year, but the apple crisps are so huge. They were enormous. I mean, I can't even really eat a whole apple. They're huge.
That's awesome.
Oh, my gosh. And they were so flavorful.
So you didn't bring any pie today?
I didn't. I was late this morning, and it got me all discombobulated.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I was late. I know. That was my bad. I should have brought you some apple pie, too. That was
well, so I saw bad. 17 pictures. I'm like, wow, they made a lot of pies.
No, it was just one. It was just one.
Got to get it from all angles.
So I started talking about Tom Brady. I was distracted. Hello, a lunar eclipse happened last
Wasn't
night.
Wasn't that amazing? Oh, you
I was out for hours. I've been called a lunatic for other reasons, but I'm really fascinated by this object in the sky and how it's illuminated, how it depends on the Earth's gravitational pull. But to watch it, I was over on the west side watching it rise over the city, and it was just absolutely beautiful. And if you missed it last night, you missed the lunar eclipse. But the next three nights are going to be sensational moon rises. It's a long full moon. It's the harvest moon. It was a blood moon. It was an eclipse. But it's one of two we can see. And, you know, if you're in your mid-30s to 50s, you have one more opportunity to see this in your lifetime. So
right.
I think it's in 22 years or something, but... It's all over Facebook, obviously. Mount Washington Observatory
Look
released
Look at Tracy's pictures. She took those pictures.
Wow. Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
With that phone?
No.
Oh.
I was with my Canon 6D on a tripod,
okay.
Extended exposure time, and then brought into Photoshop.
Wow, that is awesome.
Isn't that amazing?
For people, you know, who can't see what we're talking about, it's a five pictures of the moon going through the cycle. That it started out as my son needed to take a picture of the moon for extra credit, and he was trying to do it on the phone, and I said, oh, no, honey, let's get mommy's camera out.
Good for you. Yeah, the iPhone is a little bit limiting. You certainly can't focus, but I got some great panoramic shots of the city, and I posted them. Lots of people liked them, but it was just like, this is... The Patriots are doing a great thing today, but there's this moon thing that's even more, you know,
very
of
cool.
a phenomenon.
It was pretty amazing.
It was awesome. So if you missed it last night, you missed the eclipse, but still the next three nights are going to be absolutely beautiful, clear blue skies, incredible moon rises, full moon. Just get out there and enjoy it while you can.
Nice.
Just appreciate the little things like that.
And it's, you know, it's something local you can do. You just got to get outside. Just go outside so you're not getting the glare from your windows and find a good vantage point. Take your girl out for a date. Take your guy out for a date. Go get some local food and get out there and enjoy it.
Enjoy the beautiful moon.
Yeah.
So we were driving home from the Patriots game, and it was just huge, beautiful moon. And, you know, driving home and watching it and thinking it's going to be gone later on, this big bright moon that you think, how in the world can it, you know, be just not there?
Yeah.
It looks like it's not there. Obviously it's there, but you know, it was, then it went to, you know, the middle picture there. It's like almost completely.
Yeah. And it was very ominous. I got home around
cool.
10:30 and it was almost in full eclipse and it was so dark out. I couldn't see shadows, usually street lights and whatnot. There's still a lot of congestion on my property, and last night, even with the street lights, it was so dark in my backyard. I was like, this is, and you're looking up at it, and you know, I was looking for the witch on the corn stalk or Dracula or something. I didn't see anything like that,
but eerie.
It was,
and then
very
it was just
eerie
bright in the sky again after it was all over.
And this morning, if you saw it, I was up at 5:30, 6 a.m. It was just so bright. It was like sunrise,
oh,
an hour before sunrise.
Nice. What did you cook this week, Steve? Anything?
Did I cook this weekend? No, I didn't do much cooking this weekend. I ate a ton of food at the Twins barbecue. Every animal on the planet was in the spit. It was it was delicious. Actually, there was no lamb, but chicken, turkey, pig, cow. It was great. No, I've noticed about myself, I cook less in the summer because I'm so busy. I cook less for myself at home because I'm always out with friends cooking at their house or grouping together people. And then I tend to cook a lot more during the cold weather because summer is such a short season. Hint, hint, it just ended. That I don't, when I buy food, I tend to not use it at home. So I'm trying to reduce my carbon footprint by not buying food and anticipating I'm going to have, you know, dinner or people over. So nothing to report on cooking this weekend. And I missed the farmer's market on Thursday, so I don't know what's popping out of the ground as we speak. But I do have a couple things to talk about that I've wanted to address. If we,
of course,
we probably have to take a break at some point.
No, we don't. We're all good till we end.
So
you have a full 5 minutes.
So I want to talk about why organic, why local, and the difference between organic local food and conventional food. And I've tried to create this analogy. So you're on vacation. So why organic? Organic food. Let's talk about basil. Just to talk about one plant. So basil's out there in the field. It's organic. It's doing everything it can to absorb the nutrients from the sun, the nutrients from the soil, and strive to get as much life out of the environment it lives in to put it into that plant. So when you eat that basil, everything that plant has fought for has made it a stronger, more nutritious plant to put into your body. So you're getting the healthiest possible life form you can. Just like, to go to a conventional raised farm raised basil. It's the crops are sprayed, pesticides, fertilizer are put in it. So that sends triggers to the plants, and this goes to anything that's anything that grows naturally, you know, with a root system. So it's been told, I've got a protective skin now. I've got sunscreen on. I don't have to worry about the sun. I don't have to absorb the sun. So it's not fighting for its survival because it's being tricked into settling down, letting the chemicals do their work. So the basil you get that was raised conventionally with chemicals and 27 pesticides over its life have made that plant weaker than it was intended to naturally grow on its own. So hopefully I'm getting the message across that that is why organic, it's not why it's more expensive or why you should change your diet, but that's why it's healthier for you. It's what it's not absorbing or being put onto the plants, but it's also the life it goes through to protect itself. When it fights for survival, which is the natural evolution of anything that grows in the ground, it's producing a stronger product for us as humans to consume. And that's the way life was since the moon and the earth started communicating together. This is the way it's always been. It's only been sort of in this modern time in the past 50 years that we have completely manipulated how food is grown. So it's today's food is far less nutritious than the food our grandparents grew on.
And I've heard that, but I've never heard it that way you explained it. Mm-hmm. And it's like when we work out, we become stronger.
That's right.
It's the same theory. I've never thought of that.
You know, you go on vacation for a week, cocktails and martinis and sunscreen, you're totally turning into Play-Doh.
Yeah.
Your normal routine, you're working, you're hopefully taking care of yourself, strengthening your body. You're strengthening yourself. I mean, I don't know. I don't go on vacation to hit 7 days in the gym. I go on vacation to totally unplug and turn into a ball of Jello. And it's that sort of analogy that, you know, when you spray all your crops, you're putting them on vacation from actually trying to survive themselves. But that's
why do you think that happened? Like, you know, 50 years or so ago. Why
profit,
do you think?
Well, the food system wasn't at its finest prior to World War II. And we ran out of rations around World War I, somewhere, I don't know the timeline, but it's somewhere between World War I and World War II when we figured out modern refrigeration. Grocery stores started to become an economic thing, and it made it more convenient. And then they realized that we can produce a lot of this if we massage things a little bit. And then, of course, they who do all that are still trying to scare us into thinking there's not enough food to feed the planet, yet we throw away one-third mm-hmm. of the food we grow on a daily basis. There is plenty of food to feed the planet, including the projected 2.3 billion population increase over the next 20 or 30
wow.
years. So I think it was a good plan when it was created, but profiteers and economics got involved and they realized they can make a lot more money. And we're paying for it. Well, the cost of our healthcare in this country is higher than any other place on the planet. Developed nation. Any other developed nation, our healthcare costs have skyrocketed in 20 years exponentially, and our cost of food has gone down.
Tell everybody where they can become a member of the Food Co-op real quickly.
Always at the manchesterfood.coop webpage. You can log into our Square store. You can join. You can donate to help us get this food truck off the ground. You can buy our locally made handbags, merchandise, cutting boards, maple syrup, honey, olive oil.
Check it out. I checked it out last week, and I am a member. I'm an owner of the Manchester Co-op.
I totally forgot. You're welcome,
kid.
It's all good.
We'll be right back. No, we're done. We'll see everybody tomorrow. And Kale & Company's up next. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.